I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Alert, the U.S. striking three facilities used by Iranian-backed militias in Iraq. It comes after another attack on one of our bases injured three U.S. service members. One of them is in critical condition.
The president ordered the strikes after U.S. forces came under attack by a drone. According to national security sources, the Iranian-backed militia Kataib Hezbollah and other affiliated groups under the umbrella of Iranian-backed militants claimed credit for the attack. President Biden was briefed by his national security team yesterday at Camp David on Christmas Day. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin put out a statement that reads in part, "Let me be clear, the president and I will not hesitate to take necessary action to defend the United States, our troops, and our interests. There is no higher priority. While we do not seek to escalate conflict in the region, we are committed and fully prepared to take further necessary measures to protect our people and our facilities." The White House putting out a statement, "The president places no higher priority than the protection of American personnel serving in harm's way. The United States will act at a time and in a manner of our choosing should these attacks continue."
Should these attacks continue, and I'm willing to put money on the table right now and say the terrorist attacks orchestrated by Iran will continue against U.S. forces and against merchant ships in the Mediterranean, in the Red Sea, and in the Indian Pacific Ocean as they try to get into the Red Sea, and in the Mediterranean as they try to get into the Red Sea for the north. And in fact, the entire Mediterranean, stop and think about that, the entire Mediterranean could become a target for various terrorist groups. I don't want to tell you what to do or not do as you are maybe planning a big vacation for this coming holiday and the beginning of the new year and end of the new year. I would suggest do not take a cruise in the Mediterranean at this point. Just my view. You do what you choose to do. Thank you for joining us. Here we are, December 26, 2023. This is the first of 2 hours of Larry Connors USA back-to-back right here for you. We are every Monday through Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. And, of course, when we're on the air, we're also streaming video for you at Larry Connors USA, Facebook and Twitter. Also, News Talk STL, Facebook and Twitter. If you miss anything, video and or audio, or you want to go back and pull it up and listen to it again or in more detail, or share with others, and I always encourage you to share, you simply go to LarryConnorsUSA.com. LarryConnorsUSA.com. By the way, I have noticed the numbers even yesterday, of course, we did take a break from programming and did a best of, so we could have a little break here as well, as you did, and to celebrate Christ and Christmas in general. But at the same time, I remind you that we'll always appreciate you listening and watching. And I saw the numbers yesterday on some of our views from the day before. Wow, you guys are amazing. Keep spreading the word. Keep multiplying. Keep sharing. You're making this show just explode. It's all because of you. And we do this because we love doing it for you. And please remember the sponsors of this program. They keep us on the air. All right, so we have now the president finally deciding we will strike targets even in Iran. Even in Iran. Now, remember the caution word had always been, if you do that, you're suddenly going to inflate to World War III. Well, it hasn't happened yet. I'm not going to say it couldn't, but I think Iran also has to take notice. And, of course, they are quick to fire back with words in addition to munitions, that we will get you at a time of our choosing. Pretty close to what the president said in his statement. Here's Trey Yankst on some of the latest direct from Israel.
Overnight, President Biden ordered the U.S. military to strike a series of targets belonging to Iran-backed Iraqi Shia militias. According to U.S. Central Command, three strikes destroyed the targeted facilities and likely killed a number of Qataif Hezbollah militants. The attacks came in response to a drone strike against the Erbil Air Base that houses U.S. service members. Three Americans were injured in that attack, one critically. This does bring the total number of attacks against American interests in the Middle East to 103. Since mid-October. This does come after Israeli forces remain on high alert following an airstrike yesterday in Syria that killed IRGC commander Saeed Razi Mousavi. In response to that strike, Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi said, quote, "The act is a sign of the Zionist regime, frustration and weakness in the region, for which it will certainly pay the price." Now, the possibility of a broader conflict with Iran does come as a top advisor to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Ron Dermer, is in the United States today. He will reportedly meet with the Biden administration to discuss the next steps for the war inside Gaza.
Now, also keep in mind, the administration has recognized and decided we will make you pay for attacking U.S. forces. I'm all in favor of that. But I think my next soundbite will tell you that this is the typical game of a Biden administration of what do we do now? Which door do we go through? In fact, this indecision, inability to react rapidly has been discerning to me from the very beginning of all of this. I want you to listen now to a Hudson Institute senior fellow, Rebecca Henricks. Hudson Institute closely watches what's happening in the world, especially when it comes to warlike actions. And her response echoes my same thoughts.
The counterattack on the part of the United States was appropriate. The problem is it's still too late. And I mean, this has been, these attacks against U.S. forces in the region have been ongoing, of course, since Hezbollah's attack massacre against Israel on October 7th, far more than 100 attacks. And these are not just singular rocket attacks when we talk about 100 attacks. These are multiple attacks each time. And so I applaud the White House for understanding that this needed a much bigger response than what we've seen in the past. But I think it's still just not enough. There needs to be more to compel the Iran regime to understand that this is not going to be worth it for them, that the United States is going to defend our troops, and we're not just going to play defense, we are going to go on the offense. We know where all of these paramilitary groups are that are supported by the IRGC, that's the Iranians. We know where they are throughout the region. I would advise to do a massive attack all at once, rather than these pinprick strikes, waiting every 5, 6, 10 attacks before the United States responds. We're going to get, there's going to be Americans who are going to be killed. Right now, there's 3 injured, 1 critically injured, we're hearing. There's going to be more. And so that's what I would do. I would advise a significant, massive strike against where IRGC trainers are. We know where this Hezbollah paramilitary group in Iraq that conducted this last attack, we've known where they are. We know where they are. And so they should have been eliminated long ago and should not be allowed to persist.
They should not have been allowed to persist. Rebecca Henricks with the Hudson Institute. When you know where the enemy is located and you can target them specifically, they're not in the midst, by the way, of civilian population as we have with Gaza and the Hamas hiding behind baby beds. They have their own training camps far away from the populace. Easy to hit them directly. Why wait this long? Because of the ineptness of this administration. Well, I'm sure they think, well, maybe they'll give in. If we don't hit Iran, we can be good friends together. You're not going to be a good friend with a terrorist. You stretch out your hand to shake theirs, they will cut your hand off. You lean forward to kiss them on the cheek, they'll cut your head off. Do not believe a terrorist is ever going to be your friend. In the meantime, Egypt has tried to find a way. Can we find some peace here? Suez Canal right there at Egypt, they're worried about the shipping in and out and sitting on the Mediterranean Sea as well. So they reached out to Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, two of the terrorist groups inside the Gaza Strip, trying to propose an end to the ongoing power the war, I should say, over power and the Gaza Strip. Both groups have been holding separate talks with Egyptian mediators in Cairo. Both groups rejected any concessions beyond the possible release of more hostages. Egypt proposed, quote, a vision backed by the Qatari mediators that would involve a ceasefire in exchange for releasing more hostages, lead to a broader agreement involving a permanent ceasefire, along with an overhaul of leadership in Gaza, which is currently led by Hamas. Israel's not been part of these talks. So even if they agreed, you still got to go to Israel. And Israel is not going to cease until it exterminates Hamas. And they're not going to give any pause unless you're going to get hostages in return. Israel offered that last week, going into Christmas. We will give you 1 week of ceasefire if you release 35 hostages, mostly women and injured men or elderly men or both. Hamas attitude, up yours. Pretty much that. And now there's another issue. I'd mentioned a moment ago as we began. All the firing and the action has been in the Red Sea, in addition, of course, to Hamas and Israel and neighboring countries where we have troops stationed. But the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden going into the Pacific, the Indian Ocean, I'm sorry, have been targets for Houthi rebels operating out of Yemen and others. And I also mentioned the next target and the threat could focus on the Mediterranean.
Tensions growing in the Mideast, Houthi militants targeting more cargo ships as Iranian commander is now reportedly threatening to shut down the Mediterranean Sea. As we reported earlier, he's talking about the Red Sea. Now, it comes as a chemical tanker off the coast of India was targeted by a one-way attack drone fired from Iran just yesterday. Our next guest knows all about the threats we face from Iran. Reza Pahlavi is the exiled crown prince, and he joins us now. Reza, great to have you on the program.
This regime has pretty much mastered proxy wars and particularly emboldened and encouraged when appeasement becomes an element that gives them more reason to push the envelope. We shouldn't be therefore surprised to see that these are the kind of acts that the regime will take advantage of to try to get as much credit as possible without at the same time assuming the responsibility and bear the consequences of it.
Let me point something out now. Pahlavi, the crown prince of Iran, he is exiled. In 1986, he had formed a recently government in exile to try to establish a constitutional monarchy again in Iran. And he still hopes that the state of Iran could become democrat and secular and human rights respected. At least that's what he's saying. I don't know if he would carry that out if he were actually in charge of Iran. But for right now, he's an ally, and he's telling us this is what the mullahs will be doing. And they're pointing out directly that they're willing to move directly toward the Mediterranean, once again to the crown prince.
We should not just look at the surface and appearance of what this regime does. We have to understand that a lot of it is out of weakness and despair at home. Why? Because they have lost the Iranian nation completely. At the same time that they're conducting a war of aggression abroad, they're also using tremendous repression at home. And one has to understand that it is the nature of this regime that demands it to behave the way it does. In order to maintain itself in power, it has to continue maintaining repression at home, but at the same time conduct a kind of aggression to, first of all, deflect attention from itself. And this is why they use proxy wars to achieve that exactly, whether it is Hamas or Hezbollah or any other proxies that they support, including the Houthis.
And they're going to do it. In fact, they're warning the closure of the Mediterranean Sea, even at the Strait of Gibraltar. Now, China still plays a major role in helping Iran. We know that. China is Iran's biggest supplier and buyer of oil, I should say, biggest buyer, buying about 1 million barrels of Iranian oil every day in the first 10 months of this year. Biden threw out the Trump U.S. sanctions, if I remind you, to keep Iran from selling oil. Just another example of how Biden basically bends the knee to China. And don't forget the balloon we had earlier this year.
I think that opened the eyes of a lot of people and the need to move forward on domain awareness, the need for collaboration between fellow combatant commands with the intelligence community and across the department ultimately. It exposed gaps in the sharing of information in near real time. Ideally, we'd be able to collaborate with a single pane of glass across all stakeholders, myself, my fellow combatant commanders and allies and partners, the intel community, to share that domain awareness that gives us a picture to share and collaborate in real time. I think that's the biggest thing that we need to work on going forward.
So, again, 10.5 months later, do you have a better ability to share between these various commands and agencies?
Not where we need to be. I think one of our biggest risks right now is our inability to change at the pace the strategic environment requires. I think we need to go faster.
Why is it that time is so critical?
Time is decision space. Time is the opportunity to create deterrence options or, if required, defeat options. The only thing I can never give the President and the Secretary of Defense enough of is time and decision space. The only way you gain more time and decision space is you take data and information and you process it faster and disseminate it. That requires us to go to artificial intelligence and machine learning sooner than we are moving right now.
Yeah, in other words, we need to speed it up. That's General Van Herk in an interview with NBC. He is the commander of NORAD. Remember that balloon crossing our nation at 65,000 feet? Another question from NBC for the general.
What could more time in that incident have bought you?
From a domain awareness perspective, is to have radars that can see further. Over the horizon radars, for example, can see thousands of miles, that can give me the picture over the horizon. Today's radars are limited by the over the horizon signature. You can't see beyond that.
Do you think in some ways the balloon actually made your case for needing more coverage?
Absolutely. I think the balloon opened the eyes of folks who assumed that two large oceans on each side and friendly nations north and south gave us a sanctuary that we could hide in. The fact of the matter is we can't do that, and I think it opened some eyes.
The balloon caused you quite a bit of heartburn for a week or so. What was it like to be face-to-face with it?
Well, I wouldn't say it was heartburn. It was certainly challenging to work through authorities, options. It was something that we had not seen before over the homeland.
And he had to be thinking in the back of his mind, why the hell did we ever let it enter our space as it crossed in our international waters? But he didn't do that, and the questioner did not ask it. In the next hour, Harvard Professor Emeritus Alan Dershowitz pulverizing the Colorado attempt to keep Donald Trump off the ballot. Yeah, he's going to take that apart and give you some background that we want to share with you. And later in this hour, CNN's Fareed Zakaria calling out Poison Ivy League colleges. I mean, he really calls them out. I give him credit for that. But there is one issue he ignored, no doubt to protect himself. I'll share that with you later in this hour. But up next, the host of the Mark McCloskey on Fire program, focusing on the January 6th indictments. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
It's been a very busy year for Wellington Environmental. Tom and his staff had traveled all over making sure that minor issues don't become major disasters. Then there are the times Wellington is called in for emergencies, but nothing Wellington hasn't seen before. They have certified inspectors, chemists, scientists, environmental planners, and that's just some of their expertise. That is why the St. Louis Business Journal gave Wellington such a high ranking. So what will 2024 bring? No one knows, but if you take time to visit the Wellington Environmental Facebook, you're going to see things that might explain health issues at your home or business affecting you, your family, clients. Wellington Environmental Facebook. Tom Wellington and the entire staff wish you a blessed 2024. Your world, cleaner, better, safer. So, as always, be well with Wellington.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps in the afternoon.
Horace, Americans individually have lost over $4,000 in income and over $7,000 where you have a household with both parents working.
It shouldn't be, it's the economy, stupid. We should just say, stupid! It's the economy. Unbelievable the devastation that Americans are feeling.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps, weekdays at 3:30 on News Talk STL.
Great news for my sponsor, Napoli C. And it's no surprise to me, nor hundreds who have dined there. The first time I entered, it was clear Napoli C is unique. The decor, the fish, imaginative cocktails. And, of course, Napoli C is right next door to Napoli 3 in St. Charles. Napoli 2 is in Town and Country. The original Cafe Napoli is in Clayton. And I'm honored to endorse each of them. Visit any of the Cafe Napolis.
This is Christina Strait with Strait Realty reminding you why pay more than four. In 2003, we had a dream to start a real estate company that would revolutionize the real estate market. Now, 20 years later, after navigating through the many markets' ups and downs, we know exactly how to help you in this challenging time. I'm Christina Strait, owner of Strait Realty. Don't give away your hard-earned equity. Give us a call today, 314-441-4444, 314-441-ALL-4s. And remember, why pay more than four?
Strait Realty is a licensed broker in the state of Missouri.
You want to give a unique gift this holiday? I suggest Stolach Whiskey, produced in Missouri. Stolach Whiskey, born of natural limestone filtered water from the Ozark Highlands, aged in Missouri oak. Stolach, so smooth. Trust me, you're going to enjoy it. So next time, ask for Stolach. Visit the website, stolach.com. Stolach, Stolloch, from Stone Ledge Distillery.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Welcome back. Since the January 6th so-called insurrection, it's not an insurrection unless I put a gun in your face and say, give me control of everything. And that didn't happen. But anyway, back to the January 6th insurrection. Since that happened, as I told you, even though many were wrong in the stance they took if they were battling police directly, and others did nothing wrong, but we've had 1,100 charged, 110 so far found guilty, 366 others now sentenced. And joining us now, Mark McCloskey from our program every Sunday from 5 to 6, right here on News Talk. Mark McCloskey on fire. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks for having me on, Larry.
Well, I tell you what, I was listening to your program this last week, and I encourage everyone to listen. Every Sunday from 5 to 6, you boil down a lot of essential information. I was very interested in your take on January 6th. Let's begin with the base overall look.
Well, you know, I'll just do this as a preface. You know, out of the 350 to 500 people that broke down my gate on June 28th of 2020, spent 17 and a half minutes threatening to kill me, rape and murder my wife, burn down my house, burn down my office building, all of whom were inarguably trespassing and threatening, not one of them did a day in jail.
Now, you're talking about, let me clarify for the audience that might not be aware, you're talking about your home in St. Louis on during the Black Lives Matter march in protest. And they didn't burn down and didn't attack or anything, but they were out on the sidewalk, and you feared.
Well, and they were threatening to kill me, threatening to burn down the house, threatening to kill my wife, and we stood out there with our guns and defended ourselves. We got prosecuted. None of them spent a day in jail. But as you mentioned on your lead-in, Larry, if this is a insurrection, it was a darn poor one because nobody was carrying any weapons. There wasn't any organization. There was a bunch of middle-aged Republicans milling around, the vast majority of which were just there to, as President Trump said, peacefully and patriotically protest. And the vast majority of them, when they walked into the Capitol building, were let in by Capitol Police, walked peacefully through
stayed inside the velvet ropes. They didn't even get out the ropes.
That's right. You know, and they went through Statuary Hall and in the, you know, the vast majority of them were just taking a tour of the Capitol building. And yet, some of them have been given dozens of years in prison. A lot of them are doing serious time. And if we had Zuni Duarte, Enrique Tarrio's mom, on the program, and one of the things that Enrique got convicted of was destruction of government property in D.C. when, in fact, he was in Baltimore at the time, not even physically present. And they gave him a 10-year terrorism enhancement for destruction of government property when, in fact, he was not even in town.
Now, wait a minute. Was he thinking about destroying something?
Well, you know, Larry, good point. These days, even thinking about things that are contrary to the deep state, that's a crime now. If you've got the guts to say it out loud, you get prosecuted as a criminal defendant, and you get sued as a civil defendant like Rudy Giuliani. And, you know, you look at these, you know, how the law treats people differently these days. And I'll digress from January 6th to Hunter Biden for just a second. He defies a congressional subpoena. Well, so did Steve Bannon. So did Peter Navarro. But I didn't see anybody knocking down Hunter Biden's door, hauling him away in chains the way they did with Peter Navarro, or sentencing him so far to prison like they have with Steve Bannon.
Well, the other thing to keep in mind here is that the video that the January 6th committee was releasing for the public constantly showed the combatants. I mean, where officers with shields are trying to hold back the crowd, and they're battling back and forth. And, of course, I don't know what all went down in what order, but I do say that if you're battling police, you're doing wrong. But the sentences are over the top because of the so-called insurrection. That was nothing more than what you'd find in a situation on the street where someone is trying to fight back against police, which I'm against. They should simply follow the rules and everything else. But it's a matter of punishing not just those people, but everyone they represent.
It's designed to chill and suppress opposition to the swamp. And I always tell the story. There's a fellow named Jeff Zinker who's running for Congress in Arizona. His son, Ryan, has recently been convicted as a January 6th defendant. They sold Ryan's indictment to the grand jury by claiming that he was a mastermind of the so-called insurrection and was personally responsible for the death of Officer Brian Cisnick.
Right.
Now, the government admits that both of those things were false on the first day of trial. And so the defense moves to dismiss the charges, at which point the federal judge says, look, you're guilty. You can put on your defense if you want to, but you're guilty. They try the case. Jury takes 20 minutes to convict him on all counts. And by the way,
this is after the judge made this declaration. You talk about tainting a jury. As a lawyer, do you not say, well, you just tainted the jury? Retrial.
Well,
appeal.
You know, the bottom line is that there's no pretense of justice. There's no pretense of a fair trial. And here, the worst thing about this is that what Ryan Zink was doing was he was filming basically a campaign commercial for his dad, documenting what was going on. But what he also did was he was filming people with distinguishing characteristics, like distinguishing tattoos. They're acting as agents provocateur, egging on the crowd, encouraging people to do things like you discussed, you know, pushing into the police barricades, encouraging people to climb the stairs, encouraging people to break windows. Well, so he gets convicted. He gets, the jury recommends, I think, 21 years in prison for standing there with a video camera. So afterwards, the defense team asks to have the video cameras and the memory cards, which were seized by the government and kept from him, even in his own defense. They then ask for the production of those memory cards and videos for his appeal. The government says they've been destroyed.
you're listening to Mark McCloskey every Sunday right here from 5 to 6. Mark McCloskey on fire. Now, I want to break this particular story down a little bit because, as I said, I heard your entire program the other day dealing with it. Two things come to mind. One, he was simply taking pictures. And just the other day, they charged a Florida woman, 27 years old, charged her 30-plus months after January 6th, and her crime was, she was in the Capitol, and she did the most dastardly thing. She took photographs.
Yeah.
And the other part of that is, how many of those in the crowd that they were taking pictures of were undercover FBI agents provoking the crowd?
And that's exactly why, they threw the book at Ryan Zink, because he had things that he could prove that these were federal agents. The other thing is that his videos had to be destroyed because they by themselves were proof that these agents provocateurs were not Trump supporters, but were egging people on behalf of the government. But here's the thing. This whole January 6th aftermath, you compare it to the BLM riots that went on for months and months and months, destroyed billions of dollars worth of property, resulted in the death of dozens. I mean, just on June the 1st and 2nd of 2020 here in St. Louis, they burned downtown St. Louis. They caused millions of dollars worth of damage. They shot four police officers and murdered retired police captain David Dorn. And yet that doesn't get any press. But a bunch of overweight, middle-aged Trump supporters walking between the velvet ropes, I mean, that gets national attention now for 3 years. And
the other part of the story I want to get into, you being a lawyer, lawyers are being threatened that because you represented a January 6th chargee or defendant, then you also are on the list.
Absolutely. I mean, right now, for example, John Eastman, of course, who wrote the memos outlining what he thought the legal precedent was for what Mike Pence could do as vice president on January 6th.
He gave him options, right? Gave him six different options.
Six different options, under three of which Biden still gets elected, under two of which the results just get postponed, and only under one of which Donald Trump gets declared president. For that, the state of California put him on trial for his bar license beginning last June. They've got a bar court in California. It's the only state in the country that actually has a court devoted to trying lawyers. But now Kerry Lake's lawyers, their bar licenses are under review for representing their client out there in Arizona. Every aspect of what we used to consider to be our free republic is under attack. If you disagree with a swamp, you get charged criminally. If you identify the people that you believe were responsible for fraud, you get tried civilly in hostile courts with a biased judge and a biased prosecutor and a biased jury that's going to find you guilty no matter what or find you liable no matter what.
Your whole duty as a lawyer is to do the best you can to protect your defendant. Then to go ahead and make an appeal if you lose. But to be charged, you talk about chilling the entire judicial system if you're on the wrong side.
And it's not just the potential criminal proceedings, and it's not just the potential actions against your bar license. It's the loss of future employment opportunities. If you're working for a big firm that has to suck up to the major corporations and the billionaire class, you're not going to get a job if you've represented a January 6th defendant, or you've represented Donald Trump, or Rudy Giuliani, or Peter Navarro, and the list goes on and on and on, or Kerry Lake. So if you take a position, and by the way, we were told as the young lawyers, and I'm not a young lawyer anymore, I've been doing this for 40 years now, but we were told that you're supposed to zealously, you had a duty, absolute duty under the law, to zealously represent your client, and that means advocating every position supported by existing law, or which can reasonably be based on an expectation that the law will be reversed or should be changed. And so that was our duty as lawyers. Now, if you do that, you're subject to going to jail, losing your license, and never having a job again as a lawyer. If that's not chilling, I mean, first of all, if you as a citizen are willing to stand up and say something the power structure doesn't agree with, you'll get charged. And when you're thinking about, gee, should I go stand up and exercise my First Amendment rights, you got to think, A, am I going to become a criminal defendant or a civil defendant? And B, if I am so charged, am I going to be able to find any lawyer that will represent me?
Good point. And that's, Mark, I want to thank you for your time. Mark McCloskey on Fire, every Sunday here at 5 o'clock. Mark, thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me on, Larry.
You bet. We'll do it again. We'll do it again. Coming up next, a lib among liberals predicts Donald Trump can win.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I got an email which brought a smile. A woman named Mary wrote me, "We are purchasing a new roof from John Beal based on your recommendation." I thanked her then. I do it again now. Mary, I only endorse clients I believe in, and I've been a spokesman for John Beal for 10 years. It's all about trust. So if, like Mary, you need John Beal, trust me. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
Vincent's Jewelers carries a full selection of lab-grown diamonds and jewelry containing lab-grown diamonds. Lab-grown diamonds are a great alternative to natural mined diamonds. They have the same physical, chemical characteristics of a traditional diamond, beauty, durability you want, but at a 70 to 90% discount. See them in person at Vincent's and at vincentsjewelers.com. vincentsjewelers.com.
This is News Talk STL.
Planning a move? I encourage you to call McGuire Moving. And they not only do moving, they can provide you portable storage. They'll bring a storage container to you. You fill it at your time and convenience. They'll pick it up, move it where you want it. Here's their phone number, 314-241-0600. 241-0600. Website, McGuireMoving.com. McGuireMoving.com. Locally owned.
News, analysis, opinion.
USA, USA. That's a big game, man.
She's really losing control.
People in China didn't ask me about people mowing each other down in a mall.
This is News Talk STL.
It is their responsibility.
Hate is a metastasizing agent.
We're all keeping a close eye on this.
Illegal immigration is crazy right now.
This United States is not being overrun.
News Talk STL.
It is a crisis at the border without question.
At NewsTalkSTL.com.
Lit Cigar wins Best Smoking Lounge and Best Smoke Shop in the Riverfront Times Best of St. Louis listing for 2023. That is 2 years back-to-back. Lit Cigar Lounge and its new space in the district just off Highway 40 in Chesterfield. Lit is for men and women who enjoy great cigars, premium drinks. The website keeps you on top of special events, including live entertainment. LitSTL.com. LitSTL.com.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Well, I think it's wide open. I think Trump could win. He could win in Pennsylvania. I can see the rural areas where it's been about 68% in those counties, 50-some counties, besides Pittsburgh and Philly, in that big middle T there. I can see them growing. I can see the minority vote sloughing off a bit. The women, of course, in the burbs can decide the thing on abortion rights, a real opportunity there to vote. I think the thing that Biden has to do is he's got to enlarge the youth vote and minority vote. He's got to say to people, here's why you vote, and here's why it's important you vote. With the power to vote, you have the power to protect your rights. Women can protect their rights through in Ohio, cases like that, where you actually can see they will vote a way that shows that they're in power. How do you empower yourself? You vote. So he's got to connect democracy, which is a big word, to voting rights and people's rights, their own personal rights as young people, as minorities. You can protect your rights if you vote.
Democracy is a big word. How many can spell it? How many know what it means? How many practice it? How many want to see this nation continue to be a republic under the guise of democracy in the view of some? That was Chris Matthews, MSNBC. Very sharp critic of Donald Trump, but he began by saying, I think Trump can win. And he starts saying what Biden needs to be doing. He needs to appeal to the young people, especially the women. They think what they saw happen in 2022, women coming out more because of Roe v. Wade decision, that if they do that again, then it'll keep them in line. as far as keeping a chance, a possibility, I should point out, for him. But you look at some of the latest stuff that's been coming out, I'm not sure there's enough there to keep him going. I want to go back to a piece here I have in front of me from The Hill, and it basically begins by saying, frustration is building around Biden amid negative poll numbers. The Hill, that basically covers Congress and events of that nature on a constant basis. It leans a little more left, but they're being very direct here. Biden's approval ratings have been low for more than a year, but recent surveys show him trailing Trump, the front runner for the GOP presidential nomination, in a head-to-head matchup and in key swing states, the very thing Chris Matthews was talking about. And pointing out also that Biden's approval rating hit a new low of 34% in a Monmouth University survey released Monday. Days earlier, a Wall Street Journal report showed him at 37 approval rating. According to The Hill, Decision Desk polling averages, Trump is holding a 2% lead over Biden. I'm surprised it's that close, unless it's people that just hate Trump. But how many out there are really doing great with Bidenomics? I was listening to someone the other day talking about what they went to go buy for their Christmas dinner, and they said, we just had to change things up a little bit this year. Don't think the kids have missed it that much, but we did. There's a New York Times Siena poll showing just 33% approve of Biden's Israeli policy. This will be interesting going forward, since Biden is now authorizing attacks upon Iran and anyone who does fire on U.S. soldiers, that maybe that might pick him up some more support. They want him to look like a commander-in-chief, so maybe he sees this. Unfortunately, do you see what this is? This is simply the tail wagging the dog again. If I look strong against Iran now, when did you think that was going to happen? When Biden first came in, he dumped the sanctions Trump had against Iran, sending its oil to China. And I just told you in the preceding part of this program, since those sanctions were lifted, in fact, through just this year, the first 10 months of this year, China has bought 1 million barrels of crude from Iran every day for those 10 months. And every bit of that money goes to Iran, which in turn does not give it to its people to make their lives better. They give it to their proxies to carry out terrorist activities. So, if Biden, if you really want to prove to me you're commander-in-chief, you also shut the down and you recreate the sanctions. You're not doing that. Iran might be well of the attitude, you know what? Go ahead. Hit some of our training bases. We lose a few men. No big deal. Well, it is to them, but they're willing to let that go as long as you keep the oil open. You shut down the oil, you got a different game, because Iran is already in desperate straits, and the mullahs are barely hanging on to any power as it is. It might be just the straw that breaks the camel's back. Maybe. Then you got him, Biden, surrounded by the idiots he has in his office that he chose, like Pete Buttigieg of the Transportation Department, which reminds me, has Biden been yet to East Palestine, Ohio, where the train derailment was? Really? Has he? I'm looking, I'm thinking. The answer, Larry, I'm glad you asked, is no. But Buttigieg the other day was saying, hey, the share of EVs, electronic vehicles, has been dramatically increasing every year, and that's continuing. Now our goal is by the end of this decade to be about half and half. I think we can. In fact, I'm thinking by 2050, no American is going to be driving that old technology. That will be what we inherited from the 20th century. Americans won't use it, or they won't like it. Yeah, you keep thinking that. Now, the day we truly have a valuable and vital and obviously appropriate use of power for cars that doesn't involve fossil fuels, we'll probably graduate to it, just the way the economy and entrepreneurship would take us. And right now, we've got scientists all over the world looking for something. I wonder if I took a sesame seed and if I transplanted it with, I don't know, maybe a sunflower seed, would that somehow or another present a new fuel? Well, I'm not joking. They're using all kinds of things. You know they have the ethanol made of corn. Now, right now, Biden has to be worried about going into it, and his own party members are not exactly happy with him either anyway. All right, CNN, Fareed Zakariyyah calls out the poison Ivy League colleges. But there's one issue. There's one issue he ignored, no doubt to protect himself.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want to give someone something which they will really enjoy? Give them a Cafe Napoli gift card. You pick the amount, and they pick which of the Cafe Napolis they want to visit. Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Cafe Napoli in Town and Country, Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles, or right next door, Napoli C. The Napoli gift card. It's the perfect gift for anyone or your entire office. Cafe Napoli. Cafe Napoli.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
American universities have been neglecting a core focus on excellence in order to pursue a variety of agendas, many of them clustered around diversity and inclusion. It started with the best of intentions. Colleges wanted to make sure young people of all backgrounds had access to higher education and felt comfortable on campus. But those good intentions have morphed into a dogmatic ideology and turned these universities into places where the pervasive goals are political and social engineering, not academic merit.
That is something we all know, isn't it? You don't have to be an academic scholar to know our higher levels of institution learning are a fraud in many cases. Because the woke culture, as Fareed Zakariyyah of CNN pointed out, they have basically dismantled the issue of education and turned it into indoctrination. And yet we still have parents and everyone looking at, well, you know, if you can get that Ivy League degree, it may take you very far in life. It might. I will be very direct with you. My oldest grandson is considering looking at a couple of them. He's not really sold on them, and he's not really liking if they're going to have this DEI stuff pushed in his face. He's the kind of kid back in high school last year until they put in a dress code, was wearing a Let's Go Brandon cap, which reminds me, I saw a cartoon the other day of Dr. Jill telling the public, quit calling him that. He's beginning to think his name is Brandon. Speaking about Joe Biden. But the DEI issue, to that extent, Zakariyyah says it's almost like a bacteria that begins to feed upon itself and multiply and get bigger by constantly eating itself. It gets bigger and bigger. That is exactly what DEI is doing inside our universities.
A white man studying the American presidency does not have a prayer of getting tenure at a major history department in America today. Great inflation in the humanities is rampant. At Yale, the median grade is now an A. New subjects crop up that are really political agendas, not academic fields. You can now major in diversity, equity, and inclusion at some colleges. The ever-growing bureaucracy devoted to diversity, equity, and inclusion naturally recommends that more time and energy be spent on these issues. The most obvious lack of diversity at universities, political diversity, which clearly affects their ability to analyze many issues, is never addressed, showing that these goals are not centrally related to achieving or sustaining or building excellence.
No, they're not building excellence. And he's very right. A white man studying white history is not going to get tenure at a college. Why? Because of the very reasons he cited and the woke culture. Which brings us as to how the Harvard professor, Claudine Gay, got her position. John LeBoutier, I have on from time to time, wrote the book Harvard Hates America. He said she was a so-so professor who suddenly got elevated because she fit the box. A black woman, the head of Harvard, well, what else could you ask for? And he says she's mainly a fundraiser. By the way, I'm going to have John LeBoutier on this Friday for a recap in his words, his thoughts of what's happened this last year and what's going to happen going forward on all kinds of stories. But Fareed and the Harvard president do share something in common. Now, I did not check against whatever Fareed was saying in those remarks as to, did he lift those from someone else? Did he plagiarize them? Yes, that's true. That's true. Fareed Zakaria has a history of plagiarism, multiple serial plagiarism. There have been at least 36 instances when he, and he also works as a Washington Post columnist at times, appeared to lift passages from various publications and websites for unattributed reuse in his books and magazine articles and on his TV program. The most recent report focused on 24 instances of plagiarism on a CNN show considered the most damning to date. Now, that was in 2014, but I don't forget those who plagiarized, and neither should you. A writer for the Politico said, I looked at several of these and talked to numerous ethics chairmen and the Center of Journalism Ethics, University of Wisconsin-Madison, the Poynter Institute. All of them say he plagiarized. And one of them said he was overly reliant on his source material. It's plagiarism, low level, but still plagiarism. A pig is a pig. Put lipstick on it, it's still a pig. The Washington Post and CNN did suspend Zakaria from one instance of plagiarism in 2012. He said that was a mistake. The CNN network later said the network found, quote, nothing that causes us to have concern. And, of course, CNN refused to comment on the political study at that time and point out, well, he has a habit of borrowing. Borrowing? That's stealing, plagiarism. And it's pointed out in the article that the sentences Zakaria later read on CNN showed up in an article he wrote for Time magazine. In neither case was the work attributed to The New Yorker or Al Jazeera, where he stole them. There, of course, there are certain degrees of plagiarism, but plagiarism is plagiarism, low level or high level. And then the result of all this from Politico, most of his colleagues in the media are unconcerned. They're just unconcerned. So there you have Claudine Gay, now head of the university as president. And you should know this. Word is coming out from Fox News that former President Barack Obama was secretly lobbying on behalf of her once she made her appearance in front of Congress and made those stupid non-statement statements about anti-Semitism. And he reported lobbied Harvard officials even after that December 5 testimony and basically was trying to get everybody to close ranks around her. Obama graduated Harvard in 1991, so he's trying to protect her from being thrown out. So Obama decided he had to get involved? Really? We have a Liberal Post columnist, by the way, calling on her to resign. Washington Post columnist, associate editor Ruth Marcus said, looking at the pileup of material, Harvard's Claudine Gay should resign. She plagiarized her acknowledgments. I take no joy in saying this, but she should resign. The full list spans 7 of her publications, 2 more than previously reported. That's not sloppiness, she says. That is plagiarism. Might be putting a over-under on how much longer she's going to stay in that office. Coming up in the next hour, Alan Dershowitz on the Colorado law trying to keep Trump off the ballot. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.